Hey, Soul Tribe. Welcome back. This is episode 2.2 of Beyond Deconstructing Neurodivergence. I'm your host, T. Jamaica Polk, affectionately known as Deconstructing Neuro. And today's episode is brought to you by the Neuro Spicy Bodega. Step into a world where fashion meets neurodiversity, where your uniqueness is celebrated with style and flair. Welcome to the Neuro Spicy Bodega, where we're all about embracing your neural spicy identity in the most fashionable way possible. Picture this, the Spicy Spectrum Collection, a burst of colors celebrating the beautiful diversity of the neurodivergent experience. Or how about the Monospice Collection, where minimalist elegance makes a bold and serene statement. And don't miss the iconic Bodega Collection, a heartfelt homage to the haven that is noise-canceling headphones for those of us with sensory sensitivities. Whether you're on the spectrum, embracing minimalism, or seeking solace in sensory protection, the Neuro Spicy Bodega has something for everyone. Join us in celebrating the multifaceted nature of neurodiversity. Wear your story with pride and make a statement that's uniquely you. As a special thank you for being part of the Beyond Deconstructing family, enjoy $10 off your first order of $50 or more using promo code BEYOND. And don't forget to sign up for the Neuro Spicy Bodega mailing list to be the first to know about new releases and promotions. Visit theneurospicybodega.com today and let your style speak volumes about your incredible neurospicy identity. Today, I'm going to introduce a new segment called TikTok Therapy, where I take a video from TikTok and expand on it in the realm of autism, ADHD, neurodiversity, or mental health in general. Today's video is by one of my mutuals, and their name on TikTok is Nobody Special For Real. I'm going to tag them, make sure you follow them, and all credit is due to their brilliant mind for this video.
So last week we were talking about perseveration, how you tend to have a hard time letting things go.
Yeah.
You were mentioning how you've often been accused of holding grudges against people, but that you don't think that's the same thing.
Right.
Okay. How so?
Because holding a grudge implies a lack of forgiveness, and I don't have a problem with that.
Okay. So if it's so easy for you, then why don't you just forgive them?
Okay. Yeah, but there has to be an apology to forgive in the first place.
Okay.
Anytime it might seem like I'm holding a grudge against someone, it's not because I'm upset at what they've done. It's because they haven't apologized. You know, like, I don't care about the vase that you broke in my house because no reasonable person would ever harbor resentment over an accident. But what I do care about is how you acted after you broke the vase. Like, my relationship with you moving forward will be very different if you apologize or ask if that vase was important to me or offer to help pay for a new one despite the fact that I would never let you pay for it, than if you just walked away like nothing happened, or better yet, like, you know, continuously showed up at my house breaking vases while you simultaneously accused me of being ungenerous and obsessed with pointing out how you always break my vases.
You feel like people are always breaking your vases?
I just feel like I don't understand where the fine line is between holding a grudge and just holding people accountable.
Huh.
That's what I mean when I say that meltdowns are never about the thing that happened. They're about the fact that the thing happened again. So when I get accused of trying to, like, bring things up again, it's because we never worked through them in the first place. Like, because if we had, then they'd be behind us, you know? But they're not, because it's happening again.
Sounds like apologies are really important to you then.
I'm not asking anyone to grovel at my feet.
Because you know that forgiveness is for you, not the other person.
What I'm trying to explain specifically is that when it comes to not being able to let things go, it's not frustrating just because my feelings are hurt.
Okay.
It's frustrating because why am I the difficult one for being able to recall specific instances in the past that are related to the conflict that we're having now?
The only reason that I'm bringing these instances up is because they very clearly demonstrate a pattern of behavior that I'm trying to make us aware of.
When we're working out a conflict, why am I the one that's punished? Because my brain is just naturally easily able to keep track of all these tangential conversations. Like, why is that a disability, but someone having no idea what you're even talking about anymore 10 seconds in isn't?
Well, you know,
in a very real way, over the course of a lifetime, that's the type of shit that will drive a person crazy and make them feel like they're living in a totally different reality than everyone else is. Because they are.
Being invalidated, yes.
It just kind of feels like I'm getting the short end of the stick for having a mental ability that others don't. It's like inside-out ableism, because even when I can do something better than someone, it's still my fault. And, like, the more I try to explain myself, the more confused they get. And then they get to give up and walk away, even though I'm the one trying to make it easy for them to understand, because I thought we weren't just to go around assuming things. It's giving be the bigger person. I know what that is supposed to mean, but it feels like I care about the foundation of the house, but anyone else only ever cares about the current room that we're in. Feels like my words, which are the only tools I've ever had, are suddenly a sentient weapon that's turned against me somehow. The more I explain myself, the more confused somebody gets. What do I do with that? Like, you're mad at me for having a reaction to mosquito bites instead of being mad at the fact that there's a mosquito in our midst.
Midst?
You think I'm suffering because I've chosen to be mad at you. I'm only suffering because you're mad at me for suffering. Like, I'm not mad at you for any other reason other than not caring about why I'm suffering. So when I have meltdowns that seem related to perseverating and holding grudges, not because I think I won't survive the bug bite. It's because I know I'm going to get bitten again. That's why I bring all the past bug bites up. I just want to get rid of the mosquito. Kind of like, I think I get it. And we are out of time.
The reason why this video really stuck out for me and why I wanted to jump off with this is because I have been trying to put this into words for so long, and it took seeing this video to have it, or have my experience like spelled out for me. It is so incredibly infuriating to be told that you are holding a grudge when you are really just trying to hold someone accountable so that you can prevent having those same kind of situations in the future. But as soon as you bring it up, people are like, oh, you can't let things go. You always want to rehash things. Why can't you let things go? I can't move past something that we've never worked through. You can't go around your problems. You have to work through them. And so many people like to avoid the issue because they don't like being comfortable. And I'm speaking from my own experience, or I'm sorry, they don't like being uncomfortable. And I'm speaking from my own experience, knowing that I have an avoidant attachment style and I would rather avoid conflict than work through it. I'm recognizing that in myself, and it's helping me to recognize it even more in other people. And it's insane. But that is what has become the norm. Most of the time, because people do not want to feel uncomfortable and sit in the discomfort of being incorrect or having wronged someone, even if it wasn't their intention, they would rather call you difficult, say that you're stubborn, say that you're holding a grudge, rather than just simply apologize and actually mean it. And that's what really, like, can deteriorate a lot of relationships. It's not the fact that you did the thing, especially if it's something that you did and it wasn't intentional. What ruins the foundation of a relationship, or what starts to make things crumble, is if you don't take accountability for it, if you don't apologize and work through it so that you can actually move past it. That is what brings people down. That's what ends relationships or weakens relationships and changes the relationship dynamics to almost irreparable states at many points. And At the end of the day, we need to be okay with being wrong, being corrected, and not take it as some kind of like personal attack on our character, like we're evil or like we're intentionally out here trying to do harm. It doesn't matter how kind-hearted or pure-hearted your intentions are. Inevitably, something you say or do is going to hurt someone. And whether it was your intention or not, if someone expresses to you that you've done something to hurt them, that is actually a gift, because they are giving you an opportunity to rectify it. That means they actually care enough about the relationship and the connection to give you a chance to rectify your standing with them. But if you take that opportunity to project or to obfuscate or to make that other person seem like they're demanding or too much, or they're holding a grudge simply for asking for you to acknowledge that you hurt them, then you're not ever going to be able to build a lasting relationship. And I find this happens a lot, or has happened a lot with me in the past, between holistic people. Because for me, facts are facts, right? It is what it is. Very rarely do my emotions come into play if I can understand the logic. So if someone did something that confused me, that hurt me, and I approach them and I ask them about it, and they're able to explain it, and I can understand the why behind the what, does it change the fact that what happened happened? No, but am I able to understand it and move on past it because they've taken the time to own up to it and explain to me what was going on or what their intention was? Yes, that makes all the difference. But if I come to you and I tell you, hey, this is what you did that upset me, and you turn that into me making it a personal attack against you, and then now you turn around and project all this stuff onto me as opposed to addressing the issue that I brought up with you, then that lets me know that you're not interested in actually like maintaining or building a equitable relationship, and you just want to be right, and you don't want to have your behavior turn back in your face. You just want to go about doing whatever you want to do. And to me, that if you display that kind of behavior, that just lets me know that you don't really have a place, an active place in my life, at least. But I just want people to, like, be cognizant of this and see this kind of pattern of behavior in themselves and in other people, because it is very telling. So yeah, I really, really enjoyed this video and how succinctly she put it, because yeah, I had been searching for so long to try to explain and put into words that feeling of, I'm not angry because the thing happened. Because, especially if it was not intentional, I am upset because you refuse to acknowledge that I have the right to be affected by it the way that I was. Just because you didn't intend to hurt me doesn't mean that I wasn't hurt by it. So just apologize and endeavor to not do the same thing moving forward. Or if it's something that, like, you can't change, like it's something about you that I'm just misunderstanding, or it's something that is normal for you, or the situation that I'm just not aware of, take the time to help us get on the same page. Because again, if the person who was hurt by your words or actions gives you the gift of advising you that you hurt them and trying to repair the relationship, take that opportunity. Step into it. Don't run away from it. Don't turn the tables on them and then take the opportunity to express all the things that you are upset about. You had the opportunity to say something before, but you wait until this person has a legitimate reason to bring up something with you to then dump all the stuff on them to try to take the blame off of you or shift things. That's just very avoidant and immature. And I hope that people can start to recognize that behavior within themselves and also within others. Thank you guys for coming back. Today, I am honored to introduce to you a multi-talented artist, storyteller, and visionary whose work transcends the boundaries and touches the essence of human experience. Morgan Harper Nichols, a mixed media artist hailing from the vibrant city of Atlanta, Georgia, is a name synonymous with creativity and profound self-expression. Her artistic journey is nothing short of extraordinary, collaborating with such brands such as Google, Starbucks, Hallmark, Coach, and many more, and gracing the shelves of your favorite retailers like Target and Kohl's and Barnes and Noble's and beyond. And her art is not just about aesthetics, it's a form of communication and a bridge to the soul. And she's also a late diagnosed autistic like myself. In 2017, at the age of 27, her creative journey took an inspiring turn. She began crafting art and poetry in response to messages she received on social media, and we're really excited to delve into her work further. So today, we are delighted to have Morgan Harper Nichols on Beyond Deconstructing Neurodivergence. And I'm so excited to again, to have you on and really get to know a little bit more about you, Morgan, and your work. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. I'm so, so honored by that intro. Thank you. It's like, wow, I've come so far. That's really appreciated. But yes, that's me. That's kind of what I do, which is shocking. But I say shocking because for me, looking back on it now, I see how so much of what I've done and what I do actually comes from me being autistic. Like I can see that very clearly in my life because I diagnosed with autism, ADHD, and sensory processing disorder. And I can see how those things inform the fact that I ended up creating lots of little things because none of the big things in life were really making sense, you know, mm-hmm. in the sense of like, I feel like I can do this or I belong here. And like to even just bring it all the way down to like specifics, there were just so many different moments in my, so I'm 33 now, and there are moments in my 20s where I would apply for jobs and it didn't matter what it was, like how they were just totally, you're not qualified. And I really struggled with it because when I looked at the things that I did, I'm like, I have a lot of skills, but like my occupational titles were never quite like enough for anything. And one thing I feel like I try to talk about more and more because I don't think it gets talked about enough, of just like how much financial stress can affect so many other things in your life. And that is my story. Like, so much of what I was doing was finances related. Like, I'm like, if I don't have a place to live and if I'm not able to be at peace without always worrying about bills being paid, without always worrying about, like, I have a lot of physical health issues too, and didn't have healthcare for a long time. So having to pay for, you know, medical appointments and stuff like that, like, you know, here in the US, like trying to like go to the emergency room, like, you're just like, oh, how much is this going to cost? Like, those things took up so much of my time and energy and just mental capacity in life. And when all this is going on, so I'm married and my husband was a construction worker. So his work was very like all over the place. Like, sometimes they'd be like, oh, we don't have any work. Sorry. And it was just very, very stressful. So a lot of that stress for me, I'm just very grateful that I had technology, because technology was a place where I could be creative without having to keep spending. Like, as a kid, I love to like have paints and all that kind of stuff. But, and I was like, when I grow up, I'm going to just buy whatever paint I want and do whatever. And I was like, no, that paint's kind of expensive. You know, you can't just like buy stuff all the time. So what I loved during that time was playing on my phone and like learning like graphic design on my phone and learning how to write on my phone. And that was kind of the main thing that I did. And then one day I discovered an iPad on a commercial, and it had like the Apple Pencil. And I was like, whoa, what's that fancy stylus? Like, that looks really cool. Cause I had tried making art on like an older iPad before, but I was like, that's really cool. So that actually started around 2017. And that just became like my safe space, was like making art on my iPad. And then one day Coach Handbags reached out and they're like, we'd like for you to make something for us. And I was like, I think you have the wrong email. So I was like, are you sure about that? But ultimately, I'm telling all that because that actually connects to my diagnosis process, because I was starting to look at, I'm like, why am I able to do this so well? Like, I have struggled with so many things. And I'm like, why does this work? And I was like, oh, I started to gain self-awareness of like, oh, me being able to like create my own schedule. You know, for me, sometimes when I wake up in the morning, I'm not always like physically able to just start talking and engaging with a lot of people. So there are so many things that just being on my iPad, like I was able to control. I'm able to control like screen brightness of things, you know, like able to, I'm like, oh, these, like my, I have an iPhone. My iPhone now has like a lot of, I alter it. So they have like the accessibility features. You can make the things more bold. I was doing all this stuff like years before I ended up getting diagnosis. So I was making my iPad, like it was bold, so I can see it, keeping the screen dark. It was like a place where I could actually have control over like the sensory input and decrease some of the stress. Yeah. So it was really interesting because I didn't have language for any of that, but I just knew. I was like, for some reason, when I'm on Instagram, on social media, when I'm making art on my phone, I'm able to have more control. And that makes me feel like a way that I don't typically feel in most places in life. Like I'm feeling like, okay, I gotta adjust to whatever is happening here. And in this space, oh, I feel just a little bit more free, and I love it. So I was like, I think that's why I got good at it, because I was excited to have a place. The closest other thing I have related to that is playing Sims 4. Like, I love Sims 4. It's my favorite game. Oh, really? I'm a huge Sims 4 player. Yes, custom content, all of that. So it was like the only other thing. I'm just like, I like these, like, to have that safe space. Like, I think all neurodivergent people are worthy of those safe spaces where you're just like, I get to have a little bit more control here. So flash forward, that started happening in 2017. Flash forward to 2020, I'm on TikTok and I hear people talking about these things. I hear people talking about sensory input, and I hear people talking about, oh yeah, like, the brightness of a screen or the brightness of a day can like impact me. And I'm seeing like people talking about they're autistic. And I'm like, hold on, wait a minute. Like, I have like everything in common with these people. So it was through TikTok that it really kind of awakened me to a lot of that. When I was a kid, my mom especially, but both my parents, they had an awareness of, I mean, probably not the word neurodivergence, but they had an awareness of like autism spectrum, because my sister was diagnosed with Tourette in her preteen. So just neurological, going to the neurologist, like that was like a thing. Like that was like an awareness in our family. And my parents even tried to get me evaluated because they kind of sensed that there was something going on. But as per case of a lot of us, I didn't look like there was anything for them to look at. So it was just brushed off. So yeah, it wasn't until 2020. And I was just on TikTok, and I mostly use TikTok just for like creative purposes and just educating myself on the world in general. And, you know, I follow a lot of mental health related things and things like that. So when it popped up, it didn't seem like random, but I was like, wow, these people, I really understand what they're going through. And I was like, oh, hold on, wait a minute. I really understand what they're talking about, especially when it got to like the social part. But it was actually the sensory part is the part that really got me aware of the fact that I was neurodivergent and, you know, autistic. So one of the key things I learned from that experience was how, now, unfortunately, they're hard to find, but how important it is to have a specialist who has seen adults, like who's aware of what autism looks like, what neurodivergence looks like in adults. So I started Googling autistic adult researcher specialist in my area, and it took me a few tries. There are a few people who had that on their bio, but when I spoke to them, I was like, I don't know not quite sure, like just a question there. I was like, what's like, I remember one of the first people was like, so what makes you think that you could be autistic? And I was just like, okay,
wow.
I don't know how many adults you've worked with. Yeah, that was one of the first, and it was like over a Zoom call, and I felt like they were just not even, yeah, it was strange. I was like, you know, you don't have to put that on your bio, right? You're allowed to take it off. So that was discouraging. So that happened a few times, and then a few times I just didn't even get responses, you know, because there's not that many resources out there. But eventually, some kind of way, I was able to send an email and get a response from someone. And she ended up being a specialist who did, in fact, see adults. And I actually spoke with the receptionist first, but it was very clear in the questions that, like, okay, I do feel safer here, just even in the questions that they were asking, the receptionist was asking. So it was. Looking back, I wish I had more of the appointments, because she was so booked. I mean, I think I saw her once a month, probably, maybe even skipped in there somewhere. And it was from October 2020 to February 2021. That's when I received the diagnosis, because the appointments were that spread out. So that's when I received the diagnosis of autism, sensory processing disorder, ADHD. So, yeah.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for walking us through your journey. A lot of it I relate to, just as a woman, as being late diagnosed, being kind of highly masking and growing up in a society that really conditions us to mask our neurodivergent traits a lot of the times. And then also learning or initially being introduced to the idea of connecting my what seems like disparate traits under one umbrella, and realizing that a lot of things that connect to how I interact with people, how I talk, how I think, how I socialize, are all related to neurodivergence. And that's really important. And then also I want to tie your diagnosis back to your creativity, because you mentioned that a lot of things that you were doing were coming naturally out of you, and you didn't realize until after the fact they were related to your neurodivergence. So like being diagnosed with autism, ADHD, and sensory processing disorder later in life, how has that influenced your creative process moving forward? Like, has anything changed now that you're cognizant of the mechanisms behind it, or has it just has it only just kind of like given a name to the process that's already
been going on? It has helped so much. It has helped so much knowing. And there's a few areas where I see it the clearest, and the clearest is when it comes to criticism. So when people are critical of my artwork or my writing, my poetry, which I don't feel like I get a ton of, you know, in comparison to, you know, when you just think about the spectrum of anybody who creates something online, you know, it's not like I have to wake up every day and filter through all this stuff. But I just accidentally came across a review like 2 days ago of one of my poetry and art books that I wrote, and whoo, they just ripped me to shreds. Wow. And I was just like, oh wow. And it was so interesting because I was just like, this person doesn't know, most likely because they didn't make any reference of it. They don't know that I'm neurodivergent. And even if they did, they don't know how that means. So like some of the things they were criticizing me of were just like how simplistic my language was in some of my poetry in my book. And they were like, clearly she can't tell the difference between what goes in a book and what goes on Instagram. That's probably my biggest criticism that I get from book critics. And for a long time, I really struggled with that. But now I'm like, no, I actually use plain language very intentionally because I know that cognitive load disproportionately affects people like me and others who may not even be autistic. Like there's so many reasons why somebody may have a hard time. And because of that, we end up creating barriers to entry, even in entertainment, even in poetry and art, because if you're always only focused on, no, things have to be of this certain hierarchical literary level, which, okay, I get it. There's space for that. I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with all these different styles of writing. But for me, I'm interested in writing things in a way that somebody who is an adult and just learn how to read, but yet society makes that person feel ashamed for that. I'm writing for that person. I'm writing so that person can enjoy art too. And like even though I get like, that's where, like, where my justice comes in. I'm just like, oh, okay. You know, like my sense of justice like is tied to that. So now I have language for it. So when I see those things, yes, they do hurt, but I'm like, yeah, you just don't get it. Just like, I'm like, yeah. I'm doing something completely different here. And you were trained to see it one way, and I see it about a million different ways. So more power to you, I guess. But that's sort of that has probably become like and this is where it gets really hard though, is because when I try to explain this to people who are not neurodivergent, they think, they're like, oh no, don't talk about the haters. Like they think that I'm just like latching on to that emotional part. I'm like, no, I'm talking about the fact that like, that this is a systematic issue in the world that impacts a lot of different people, that we live in a world where people do like to be very protective over things to the point that they don't even know what it looks like when someone who has a different cognitive ability than them or has a different neurology than them is making something. They don't even have a frame of reference. So it's like, we have a lot of work to do as a society of understanding that people who are different are going to make different kinds of things. So like if that person that's different from you, you're like, oh, I don't know that experience. Well, there's a good chance that you might not understand fully their art, or there might be something you're missing. And I see people starting to do this when it comes to, like, for instance, race. So sometimes I feel like I'll see in book reviews, like let's say it's a book written by a Black author and someone who's not Black reads it. Someone may say, oh, you know, I'm not Black, so there may have been things in this book that I didn't get, but right, I still enjoyed it. You know, we got to do that for neurodivergence too. So it's like, I'm not neurodivergent, so there's things. So there's a way that they wrote that I may not fully get, but I still enjoyed it. So I'm trying to be like, talk about that more. Cause I'm just like,
yeah.
I'm like, imagine like not knowing you're neurodivergent, not knowing you're autistic. And then people are just like criticizing the way that you're making something. And you're just like, but this is the way that, like, and they're saying things like, oh, it's not authentic, or it's not this or that. You're like, no, but it is. I'm just authentic in a different way than you. So That is probably one of the biggest areas that I feel like it has helped me, because without that, it would have just made me feel bad about myself and I may have quit. So now I feel like I have language to be like, no, here's why I do what I do. Here's why.
That is so major. And thank you so much for explaining it that way, because that is so true. A lot of us we come up against this barrier a lot when we are very authentic in our expression, because it diverges from what is considered normal. And there's a Latin mm-hmm. phrase that I use a lot. It's "dam nat quod non intelligunt," which means they condemn mm-hmm. what they do not understand. Mm-hmm. And because we a lot of the times face criticism for people condemning what they don't understand, it leads to masking, it leads to internalized ableism, it leads to a lot of things that keeps mm-hmm. us mm-hmm. and holds us back. And I'm so glad that you really touched on that and how creativity has been a tool for you to heal even before you had the language for it. But now that you have the language for it, it's furthering that. And that kind of leads me into my next question. So since creativity has been a powerful tool for healing and self-expression for you, how do you think that people who may not be artists can kind of take that same thing that you learned about, like, okay, this is my authentic self and this is what I'm doing, mm-hmm. and channel that to be their more authentic selves and start to unmask? Whether it's not just unmasking autism, but like, I feel like everyone masks to a degree to fit into society. So,
absolutely. Yes. That is something I have been actually working on, creating like a long, long list of ideas for people, because I've noticed that for me, it's because it started with art for me, but I'm like, I'm not just sitting at my desk, you know, making art all day. So I was like, I still need moments in my day-to-day life, you know, where I can start to figure out, well, what is my way of being in this moment? What is my way of doing this? So one thing that I've been doing, and, you know, I would encourage people to do the same, is, you know, maybe start making a list. And or if you're more visual, you know, you can make like a collage, like on an app or something that has mm-hmm. like a Canva, and make like a collage of different things that remind you of places where you feel a little bit more free to be yourself, and break it down to the most smallest thing. So here's some examples. Are you someone who likes to make music playlists? So I know I'm not one of these kind of people right now in my life. I used to be, but I know some people, and some of them are neurodivergent, who they enjoy making playlists about very specific points in life, or very specific like times of the day or different tasks that they're doing. Like, some people are very, very serious about their playlists. So mm-hmm. I think if you're the kind of person who's very serious about your music playlist, that's not just a playlist. You're creating emotional soundscapes of ways of communicating, of ways of like connecting ideas together. Are you putting one artist next to another artist that those artists aren't even in the same genre? Or even if they are, like, those songs are made at different points in history and all this, but you see a pattern between them. You can find that's pattern recognition. You're finding mm-hmm. patterns, like emotional patterns in songs. You're just doing it intuitively. And I notice it because I don't actually have that, as well as my sister, who is also neurodivergent and has like this, like, you can be anywhere and hear like just like a singer's riff at the end of the second verse. And she's like, oh, they did that riff just like Dolly Parton did in 1989. And I'm like, how is your brain collecting all of this? So, you know, you don't have to be that extreme, but because, and we joke about it all the time, but because she is like that, it has helped me see, oh, I'm not like that. I'm like that in a different way. Like, I'm like that. I have like a visual sensitivity. So like another thing is food. Like, some people may have like a very particular way that they like to express themselves in what they cook, or somebody may have a very particular way in like, maybe you have a very certain way that you like to do your spreadsheets at work. Like, maybe everybody else does this way. You're like, I like to do it like this. Like, these are all different ways that if you're feeling passionate about it and you're feeling, or even just angry, because mm-hmm. you're like, why is everyone doing this way? Even if it's a spreadsheet, even if it's just how to sweep the kitchen, like whatever it is, look for those ways where you start to see, oh, I have a little bit more control here. I want to have more control here because there's a certain way I like to do it. And let yourself just do those things your way and make a list of those things and try to let that list grow and grow and grow and grow. And that's been very helpful for me, because I get very overwhelmed over just so many things in the day. Like, for instance, washing mm-hmm. dishes. Oh, my goodness. I will. Like, I had one sister, and growing up, we worked out like a lifetime childhood deal where I was like, I will wash all the clothes in this house if you do the dishes. Because I can't stand washing dishes. I can clean up anything. Like, I'm like, I will scrub the floor. I will scrub the ceiling. I will do anything but wash those dishes. So we worked out an arrangement as kids. I was like, you wash the dishes, I will wash and fold all the clothes. So even like with chores, like, you know, just daily chores, like a lot of, you know, with ADHD, executive functioning is really hard for me. So I try to be kind to myself and think, I'm like, you know what, if I can't get to everything today, that's okay. Like, let me do the thing where I feel like I can do a little bit more of that and take some of that pressure off myself. So When I go to fold clothes, I like to go get them right after they have finished drying, because I like the warmth. I like the way that warmth feels of the materials, because once that temperature goes down, I don't like to touch all those materials as much. So I like to like get it while it's still warm. And then that makes it more doable for me. So then I'm like, look, I did something today. You know, yes, the dishes are still stacked to the ceiling, but that's all right. I did something else. So just keep looking in your day-to-day life. Like, where is it? Like, is it? Yeah, it could be the smallest thing. It's like, why does everyone put the broom over there? I like when the broom is right here. It's like, well, that might be a little clue of like, maybe what would it look like for you to create more areas in your life where you feel free to be yourself and get to know yourself more and take some of that pressure off yourself.
That's awesome. I think there were two different key points that you just touched on that I really appreciate you sharing. One was just looking within yourself and seeing how you can apply these principles. Because I think a lot of the time some people get too literal and they see exactly what someone else did that worked for them. And then they try mm-hmm. to apply that exact same method.
Yes.
But you should be mm-hmm. looking at the motivation behind the method, not the why behind the what is what I like to call it.
Yes,
so the why
yes,
is you found so what works for you. Not necessarily the what, which is the art that came out of it. Yes. But the second point that I really love that you made was about when you are looking to apply those things to yourself, is to find the areas where you are starting to feel where you are in the most control, or that you are able to express yourself the most authentically. Because a lot of us, like we were saying earlier, being forced to mask and being made to feel like our neurodivergence is something that we need to hide, a lot of us don't know what feels natural to us mm-hmm. because we weren't allowed yes. to connect with our bodies. So mm-hmm. I really, really appreciate yes. that. I think a lot of people need to hear it put in that plain language. Like you're saying, like, hey, it's not as difficult. Like the concept sounds difficult, but it's not at the end of the day. I'm not telling you mm-hmm. what to do. I'm telling you how to apply it.
Yeah. And yes. And it's like, you're probably already doing something, like even if it's in a small way, it's just like noticing it. Like, I think that's such a huge thing that for me was when I started to feel like, especially ADHD in particular, when I started to feel like, whoa, what in my life haven't I been able to accomplish because of this intense ADHD? And when I started to really feel a lot of like, you know, sadness and grief with that, thinking mm-hmm. about all the struggle. What really helped me was realizing all the things that I have been doing along the way. You know, like when I look back and I saw like, oh, you playing Sims 4, to a lot of people, that probably was just you playing video games, but you were like learning about human connection. And I know there's probably plenty of people out there who are like, no, you can't learn about human connection in video games. Well, I just passionately disagree with you, at least from my experience, because for me, video games help me practice, you know, talking to people. And like, even down to the specifics of like how on Sims, like people randomly show up at your house, like, do you know like how stressed I get if somebody just randomly shows up at my house? So
I've hidden before and acted like I wasn't home.
Oh yeah, me too. I'm not here. I'm never at home. Never. I'm never out in the world, but I'm never at home either. I'm just an orb, okay? So I'm a floating orb. So anyway, it's like it actually helped me work on more with like anxiety of that. Of like, oh, so what do people do when they just randomly show up at your house? Like, I know it's a game, but it's kind of become like a fun game with that I play with myself. Like when things do happen, like or someone just randomly shows up or I have to like randomly do something I was not prepared for, I started thinking about Sims and I'm like, well, what would my Sim do? So yeah, there's so many different paths. And that was really cool for me to discover because I was like, I wasn't trying to like, you know, soothe the struggles of my neurodivergence. I was just a 20-something who loves Sims. So yeah, I think it's really cool when you can start to see, oh, look at me. I've been doing stuff. Like I've been making progress when I didn't even realize it.
I love it. And actually that actually kind of sparks my next question. So your book, All Along You Were Blooming, I loved it. I personally love your writing. And it and maybe it's because it's stoking that neurodivergent part of my brain that I just really love how the plain language helps you to see the imagery. But I feel like the conversation that we were just having reminded me of that book because All Along You Were Blooming is kind of, to me, it feels like you were reaching back to your former self before you knew about your diagnosis and letting her know like, hey, even though you might have been a little bit confused, the whole time you were just getting, the flower petals were peeling back and you were coming into who you are. So the whole entire time wasn't a waste. You just were getting to where you needed to be. And so. Yes.
Oh, interesting. That way. It's so true.
I love it. Well, with that being said, I bring that up because could you share maybe like some of the key takeaways or message from that book that you believe has had the most impact on your readers? Because that's how I interpreted it. And I don't know if that's exactly how you meant it to be. Or also maybe if there was something else that you really wanted to convey with that work.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm so grateful that connects with you. That was a very special project because I had to figure out how to do it because I didn't, the way my brain works doesn't really work with like the traditional, like outline your book and then write it. And then, you know, where are your takeaways? Like I really struggle with a lot of the traditional structures. So I was like, okay, how do I get all this stuff in my head on to pages? And for me, it had to start with looking back and realizing that all along, all those little things that I was doing, and I never connected Sims 4 to this till you said that. So thank you for saying it that way, because I was like, oh, I needed that connection. That makes it so much more satisfying. But it was a lot of little things like that. Just like, what were all the little things that helped you along the way to get here? Because in a way, I was like, that's kind of all that I have. One thing that can be very challenging when you're, you know, and I'm sure you can connect to this too, when you're sharing things online, there you don't know who's on the other side. It's like you see their comments, you're engaging with them, but it's like you don't really know them in like these like really deep, intimate ways. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's very hard, like, I don't like to just like project onto people or just assume that I know their lives. So sometimes it's like, I'm like, well, what do I even say? They're like, just say something. I'm like, but I don't know you. I need more information. So I'm like, oh, I guess this is where the whole like looking at yourself thing comes in. Cause I'm like, I do have a lot of information on her. So, okay, time to go deeper, as they say. So that's where that came in. I was like, all right. I could tell you about me. I could tell you about the words. I could tell you about the mountains and the valleys and the things, the images that helped me survive. And I was just trying to survive then. But now I can see it as, oh, I was like planting seeds that are growing now, that are blooming now. And my hope is that people can see that as like a prompt for their own life, you know, of like, maybe there's some little things in my life that I'm going to look back on and realize like, wow, I really did learn how to let go of some things. Like I did learn how to like be courageous. I did learn how to like say no to certain things or say no to certain people who weren't kind to me or, you know, different things like that. I did that. And I'm proud of myself because I can look back and see that all along I was blooming.
That's beautiful. And I think that that's a message that everyone needs, not even just within the neurodivergent community. I feel like we're under so much pressure. Like I was saying earlier, it's not just autistic people who mask. I feel like we all mask to some degree, and we can really get far away from recognizing the growth within ourselves if we keep comparing mm-hmm. who we are to this external societal image yes. of what we're supposed to be. And we're not all born. If we were all supposed to be one way, we wouldn't be born with such beautiful variances in expression mm-hmm. and how we look and things like that. So I really love that you are encouraging creativity, not just for creativity's sake, but to really get in touch with who we are and like use it as that tool for healing and expression. I feel like that is really, really needed. I don't think a lot of people, especially from what I've been seeing when I speak to other neurodivergent people, realizing that you can really heal through other avenues that aren't just like these traditional, like I'm going to go to therapy and continue to do things the holistic way or the way that someone says you're supposed to do it. You can find healing by just being authentic. And the authenticity mm-hmm. looks different in each individual.
Oh, yes, that's so true. And yes, finding what your unique authenticity is such a key part because, and you know, it's something that affects everyone, but it's like we live in a world that's like constantly trying to like squeeze people into boxes, like, and you know, our very nature is just like, okay, yes, the box and a million more boxes. And you know, there's like so many aspects of it, and it's really, I'm really just trying to think more about, I'm always thinking now about other ways of communicating this. And also too, like, I know I'm a guest on this show, but I just have to commend you because you do that so well, so eloquently. Your way of like, you have a way of just like capturing nuance, like, and on social media that gets missed. And I'm just like, I'm so grateful for like the work you do. Cause I'm like, it's so needed. It's so needed for us to have someone addressing all these subtleties. Like I feel like you address so many subtleties. Like I'll come across your post, like, I got nothing to, like, what do I even say? Cause I need to go sit with it for an hour before, you know, before I say something, because it is such a good, it's so good to just know that other people are out there, you know, such as yourself, who are thinking about all these nuances, cause there is so much that's getting overlooked and missed. And yeah, just very grateful for that.
Oh, thank you, girl. You got me over here blushing. I appreciate that. And I completely agree. I think what started me on my journey, at least with my TikTok page, was out of frustration. I had just gotten out of a social interaction that has happened to me plenty of times. And in that moment, it had finally clicked to me because I now had the language of understanding how I think and why that interaction went the way that it did. And just getting online, sitting in my car right after this happened and being very honest about the dots that I disconnected resonated with people and kind of started getting people to follow me. They're like, yeah, I've had that same experience too. Or, oh my goodness, I didn't realize that. This, and I was like,
Wow, I have that in common in a small way on TikTok, because I did a poem earlier this year where I feel like in the video I look pretty visibly angry, and I almost didn't post it, but it was a very similar thing. I had an interaction and I was like, that's what that was. And I started working on this poem and I finished it after that. Oh, I went for it. And it really, you know, it's like, I wish it hadn't taken that, but I am grateful to have like been somewhat aware and like, you know, pen ready to actually put this thing down and talk about it. So yeah, I can relate to that.
Yeah. And that's another thing. I'm so grateful for like platforms like TikTok and social media platforms, because as much as they get a lot of grief because, yes, no matter what, whenever something gets starts to become more mainstream and acceptable, there's going to be people who want to commodify it, who want to get into it and gain clout from it or whatever. But overall, the overwhelming majority of people that I've come across, at least in our community online, are genuinely just trying to figure things out, answer questions, ask questions, like really just learn about ourselves and share that. And through that, it's helped. To me, I feel like my autism diagnosis has been life-saving, not just life-changing, but life-saving, because a lot of the things that I struggled with that made me really like feel like I was alone and like there was nobody else in the world that could possibly relate to my kind of experience. That feeling has completely gone away since connecting with the actually autistic community online and without these kind of social media platforms to where I'm able to meet people all over the country, all over the world. I now have mutuals who live in the UK, who live in Australia that have had similar experiences to me. And it makes me know that I am not alone as much as I've grown up feeling like an alien or feeling like nobody really understood what was going on in my mind. Like, I now know that there are millions of people around the world who have the same experience. And I think that we need to maybe move past the trope of TikTok is just an app for dancing kids and realize that it is a viable method for transmitting information and also connecting and saving people through that connection.
Exactly. Yes. And, you know, I hope this doesn't come across too strong to some people, but I don't know. I mean, it's the only way I can say it. I think that a part of that, people looking at social media as like, oh, that's just something. And yeah, sometimes it's useful because that's out there a lot still, is a lot of those people don't realize the enormous privilege they have to live in a world where they don't need another space. They don't realize the enormous privilege that they have when they can just walk in places, hang out with people, go to family gatherings, do whatever they got to do, and not have to constantly become a, you know, contortionist of inside and outside. I'm just like trying to like fit into, like they don't realize that. And I think that is why I stay, because I'm like, yeah, I don't have the privilege of getting to go places where I can actually talk about what I want to talk about as a Black 33-year-old woman in Atlanta and not be laughed at. Because I've tried, but I'm telling you, there are times where I'll just like mention Sims, which is a very important special interest of mine, and I love it. And I've literally been laughed at and be like, people still play that? Like, what? And people don't understand, like, and I'll try to be kind. I'm like, yes, there's a whole community. A lot of us play, like, you know, it's very special. And no, nothing. Like, people just think, oh, that's just like a weird quirk. I'm like you, when you said life-saving, I'm like, yeah, that's the stuff that helps you when you have spaces where you're not getting laughed at for the things that help you stay alive. Like, yeah, the things that help you feel like life is possible and life can still have joy and peace. Like, that's some real serious stuff. So, for those reasons, I'm like, yeah, until society figures out some other ways of like making people feel, it's like, yeah, we're gonna have these little vertical metal devices with little screens on them. And we use those devices to actually connect with others. So yes, that's my miniature rant on that.
Here, here. I joined you up for the soapbox. Yeah, I feel like I bring that up a lot. Because all throughout the first season of the podcast, most of the people that I had, I met through TikTok originally. And I think we first connected through Instagram. It was either Instagram or LinkedIn, and then on TikTok. Yeah. So that makes it a little bit different. But we, like, a theme was, I felt like every episode I went into a TikTok rant. And it's really because of what we were just talking about. I feel like we need to move past, like, delegitimizing it because, yeah, I feel like that's still a battle that we're already fighting, the battle of the face of autism, right? Where people have this one idea of what it looks like. And then when you try to present alternate facts about, well, not alternate facts, but alternate perspective with additional information to let them know, like, hey, this is a narrow scope, then you have to fight that battle, right? Okay. And then if you have people who accept that people who aren't just white males can have autism, mm-hmm. then you have to, like, go through all these other layers. When you add in mm-hmm. someone also trying to delegitimize where you found your information or what was the spark and impetus for you going through this journey, it just keeps adding more and more layers to you having to justify who you are or explain who you are, mm-hmm. which can be really exhausting and is also compounded by the fact that most of us who are autistic have already spent most of our lives trying to, like, apologize for our existence.
And then you add on
now I have to apologize for how I figured out something about myself. It can be mm-hmm. really frustrating and also hindering the progress that is necessary for us to continue to make.
Yes, exactly. Yes. And that's why, you know, again, you know, I'm grateful for you and people who are sharing in all these different capacities, because we need each other. And, you know, there's been times where someone's like DM me and, like, I have, like, you're in my notes app of, like, people go follow, like, go follow this person, because I'm just like, you know, yes, there's my story, but I'm not the only one who is, you know, sharing. Like, there's more of us trying to, because it's like, it shouldn't have to be on one part. Like, one, you know, we're all living this experience that we're talking about. So, you know, we're not just like, oh, recalling something that happened long ago. So, like, one thing that I've been kind of jokingly saying, but I'm serious, is like, people are like, oh, you know, how come you haven't created, like, an autism resource? I'm like, because I've been pretty busy being autistic. Like, it takes me a long time. I'm working on it, but I'm also have ADHD, my executive functioning. It takes me a long time to do things. So, you know, just because you don't see me posting about, I mean, some things I literally work on years. Like, I posted something on Instagram over the weekend and I looked at my original, like, notes app where I started it. It was a whole year ago. I was like, that Instagram post took me a year. So, you know, it's like just creating more space for that. And, you know, my hope is to keep talking about it and adding to the conversation of, like, yeah, there's just so many ways we're all navigating this.
Awesome. I love it. Well, with that being said, that's actually a good segue, because I wanted to talk about, like, if there are any, like, upcoming projects or creative endeavors that you're excited to talk about or that you're working on that you'd like to share with the audience.
Yes. So my latest endeavor, one, I have an app called Storyteller, and talking about working on things for a long time, that's another one. Started working on that in 2018 and still working with a team of developers who had reached out to me through Instagram. They're like, would you like to make an app? And I'm like, I don't know how to do that. Okay. And I learned, and we've been working on that for several years. So it's called Storyteller. And it has daily encouraging messages and journal prompts and word of the days. And I, you know, I definitely try to make everything in that app something that feels doable, you know, no matter what you're able to do that day. Like, I try to make it where you can be like, yeah, I inhaled and exhaled today. And even if it wasn't a deep breath, I did breathe, and that is worth acknowledging. So a lot of the app is like that. It's meant to just be very, very grounding for your story. And then I am in grad school right now. So I kind of going back to the whole thing of, like, I think that we are all worthy of spaces where we feel free and safe to talk about the things that help us find life and joy and make life feel possible. I realized that going back to school for me kind of was that, because I'm in an online program that is studying. It's a media arts program. So it's all about video games and art. It's all about, like, technology and art. And yeah, right now that's something that I'm just pouring a lot of energy into. And I'm working on a project within that'll have to do a video game. So that'll probably come out next year. And I'm just really excited about that. So yeah, that's kind of what I have going on.
That's awesome. I love to hear that. And it's coming full circle, because you're working on furthering your education in an area that clearly is something that you are very passionate about, which is the key to success, especially for people with ADHD, when you have those special interests and you're hyper-focused, and also us as autistic. So I love to hear that. And I'm really looking forward to your future projects and using Storyteller myself for the journal prompts. And yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you. That means a lot. And yes, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Well, thank you, Morgan, again for sharing your time, your experience, your wisdom. And I want to thank you again, because I've been such a fan of your work, and I'm really looking forward to having you on. I hope to have you on again and to have further discussions. Yes. This was amazing.
Yes, I also hope that this is not the last time. Again, so grateful for what you do, and thanks so much for having me. I was really looking forward to this. So yes, I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you once again to the lovely Morgan Harper Nichols for gracing us with her time and sharing a bit of her story. I hope you guys enjoyed that. Make sure you check out the description, because I'm going to be leaving links to all of her social media and her work. And make sure you give her a follow and support, support, support. Originally, I wasn't going to talk about this, because those of you who follow my platform, you know that I primarily talk about neurodivergence and disability, and I was just going to stay in my little niche, but the more and more I'm following this, and more I'm educating myself on the situation between Israel and Palestine, the more I understand that I can't be silent, and people like me shouldn't be silent. There's a thing called pattern recognition. And a lot of the times, most people are just stuck at what's going on. They're reactionary to the what, and they're not looking at the why. So a lot of takes that I'm seeing are people trying to defend Israel's harsh and their actual barbaric response to Palestine by saying, well, look at the Palestinians. They're doing this, and look at what Hamas did. Yes, what Hamas did. And the loss of Israeli life is tragic. No one is championing or supporting the loss of life on either side. But we need to look at the why behind the what being what Hamas did. But let's ask why. And the why is because they've been occupied for 75 years under apartheid from the military state of Israel. And they've not had the might to be able to fight back until now. And so if we look at the why behind the what, you'd understand that although what Hamas did and the loss of Israeli life and the lives of those who were in Israel who were from other countries is tragic, and we mourn their loss sincerely, we can't then keep focusing on that and forgetting that for 75 years, these people have lived under occupation and have been living in the world's largest open-air prison under oppressive and just incredibly restrictive circumstances. After a while, if you put yourself in their shoes and you see Palestinians as people and not as these barbaric, less than human, dehumanized entities that the media would have you see them as. If you see them as people and you empathize with them as fellow human beings, it will make complete sense to you why, after 75 years of being told that you can only stay in one area, having all of your rights restricted, not being able to move freely, and being literally under apartheid, that people finally built up enough might to fight back against their oppressor. When you look at it that way and you compare it to other things that have happened, even in recent history, like when we were all supporting Ukraine, fighting back against Russia, why are we not applying that same principle to this? Because it's the same thing. It's the same why. The what is different. It's Israel versus Palestine as opposed to Russia versus Ukraine. But the why is the exact same fucking thing. And I need people to think. And to stop letting their emotions run free and just taking every little word that's being said, all of this like media propaganda that is highly predicated on stoking emotional fires in a population of people who have not been taught to think critically and to just be reactionary to what's going on. I need us to actually think. I need us to rub two brain cells together, take 2 seconds, and look at the why behind the what. Who is benefiting from us continuously just believing what is fed to us and not thinking critically? So with that being said, I want to thank you guys again for stopping by and spending a little bit of time with me today. I appreciate you guys so much, and make sure you come back next week for another episode of Beyond Deconstructing Neurodivergence. I'm going to have on another guest. This person, I think it's actually a very apt time to feature this interview. It's one that I recorded way back in June before I decided to take the whole summer off to kind of decompress and reformat. But with everything that's going on nowadays and what I just touched on between Israel and Palestine, next week we're going to be hearing from Ben Van Hook. He is a Chinese American who was adopted by a Jewish family. So he is also Jewish. And recently he has been speaking out about his experience as a Jew and also as an immigrant, someone who is neurodivergent, and how those intersections overlap. And we touched on that during our time when we spoke even back in June before the current events kind of ramped up. And it's very apropos. So come back next week. Join me for another episode of Beyond Deconstructing Neurodivergence. I love you guys. Stay safe.